You want to start here?
Sure.
Sure. Tell me where you think that the water level is going to go up to.
Oh, yeah. All of this will be underwater. Puberty Rock will be under by 40 feet because we're slanting downhill from that height up there, 20 feet above everything.
Chief Colleen Sisk is talking about what will happen if the government has its way and the Shasta Dam enlargement project goes through. After decades of planning, the project is moving towards final approval.
And see, up there, it'll still impact, like, Sacrapool, it'll impact Waiwaket Village, it'll impact all the way up to the rock house that Westlands owns now.
We stand on dry meadow grass. This is a Winnemem-Wintu dance ground. We're in a narrow valley with mountains all around, looking down at the McLeod River below. It's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been, with earthy tones of red, green, and brown. Behind us is the rest of an old village site, where Chief Colleen's great-grandfather was the headman. She gestures to all the sacred places that could be destroyed if Shasta Dam is built higher and water levels in the reservoir go up.
And so then how does that impact Children's Rock?
We're hoping it doesn't impact it, but it'll be underwater for unless they draw down all that water.
And the dance ground. What happens to the dance ground?
It'd be underwater. The women's healing pool on the little stream, that'll be underwater. Coyote Rock will be underwater. This village will be underwater. The burials that are across will have to be moved.
Yeah, there's burials.
Yeah, and there's burials here. And there's burials upriver that'll have to be moved.
I'm Umbreen Khan, and this is Inspired by Interfaith Voices. This week, we're airing part one and two of a new documentary series that explores the struggle between a Native people and the government. The struggle transcends land. It's about identity, water, history, and confronting the injustices committed against Native people in the name of progress. It's a story that began in the early 20th century when the land the Winnemem-Wintu called home was taken by the government to eventually build the Shasta Dam in Northern California. Fast forward to 2017, when plans are put into motion to expand the dam by elevating it, a move that the Winnemem-Wintu say will make their sacred land inaccessible and inhibit their ability to practice their wisdom traditions and rituals that are tethered to the place. What's so powerful and different about A Prayer for Salmon are the voices and sounds we hear. Over the course of 5 years, Judy Silber builds relationships and trust with a people who are typically suspect of outsiders. Through her work and partnership with co-host Lila June Johnson, an Indigenous scholar, we hear a story that centers the experience of Native people and wrestles with questions about what is sacred. What does it mean to acknowledge land and water rights today? And how do our current laws protecting religious freedom treat Native people and Indigenous spirituality?
Chapter 1, A Protest at Shasta Dam.
I got the letter in the car.
The Shasta Dam Visitor Center near Redding, California, is about as busy as one might imagine in the lazy afternoon hours of a hot Wednesday in late summer. That is, not very. A large parking lot with lots of empty spaces. The occasional random tourist who wanders into the one-room exhibit. The year is 2019, and on a grassy area outside the center, a crowd of about 40 people has gathered around Colleen Sisk, spiritual leader and chief of the Winnemem-Wintu people.
This dam destroyed my people's land, the burial grounds, the hunting grounds, the fishing grounds.
Everything. Behind Chief Colleen, we see the top of Shasta Dam, set against a backdrop of dry, rolling hills. Shasta Dam is the country's eighth tallest dam. It helped California expand into the giant agricultural engine it is today. It also left a legacy of harm when its construction and that of the reservoir behind it flooded the Winnemem-Wintu and other indigenous people off of their land.
None of the people on the river wanted to give up their homes. They didn't want to leave the river.
Chief Kellyn is talking about the McLeod River. The McLeod is one of Shasta Dam's main tributaries. And for the Winnemem-Wintu, it is the heart of their homeland. When the dam was built in the late 1930s and early 40s, they were forced to leave, forever changing where and how they live.
We didn't get any land on the McLeod River. We didn't get anything for everything that was taken. We were displaced and homeless, and our people was in the boarding schools and in the service. And when they came home, they had to have a different kind of life.
Young men like Chief Kellyn's father, Calvin Sisk, returned from World War II to find their homes disappeared. They had to make their way however they could. Also displaced from the McLeod were Chinook salmon. For thousands of years, they provided a food source for the area's indigenous people, who regarded salmon as a sacred relative. But when Shasta Dam went up, it blocked the salmon. They could no longer get to the McLeod.
The salmon didn't run up the river anymore, and we didn't have any rights to fish on that river anymore.
Chief Kellyn Sisk wears a skirt, long strands of beads, and a traditional woven basket hat. Her long black hair is braided down her back. She's fairly small in stature, but with the solid build of a former softball player, which she is. Her appearance indicates a person who will stand up for herself and her people. The Winnemem-Wintu are like refugees on their own land.
But at this time, we're trying to pull people back together. And it's been a difficult fight for us with no land, without our fish, without our ownership of our own sacred places, fighting with the Forest Service all the time to even do our ceremonies. And now it's like the Bureau of Indian Affairs has forgotten all about the land that they signed off on this river.
Here, Chief Kellyn is referring to the fact that the federal government had to acquire Indian lands to build Shasta Dam. It was a messy affair, and really a story for another day. But here are a few of the highlights. An 1887 law called the Dawes Act allotted land to native people of the area. In other words, land that was already theirs. Later, in the 1930s and 40s, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation was preparing to build Shasta Dam. Agents had to track down indigenous landowners and their heirs. But they lost patience. So in 1941, Congress rushed through a law, the Central Valley Project Indian Lands Acquisition Act. It would make one bulk payment to the local Indian agency. They were supposed to distribute the funds, but it's not clear whether native landowners actually got their money. Chief Kellyn insists the Winnemem-Wintu did not receive any compensation for their land. She's bitter.
They were supposed to give us like land to live on. They were supposed to have an infrastructure so that we could start again. None of that happened. And instead, it went to the Forest Service. All of our village sites turned into campgrounds.
You wouldn't know any of this from displays at the visitor center. The U.S. Bureau of Reclamation is the federal agency that built the dam. It cheerfully spins the dam's history as a successful New Deal project. It never mentions the displacement it caused.
We're going to gather up right around here. The tribe has a letter to deliver to the Bureau of Reclamation about how absent we are in the information in there. Mm. Yeah. So anybody who don't want to do that, time to duck out. All right, you guys ready?
Yeah.
Let's go on the road.
The group, which includes Winnemem Wintu and supporters, forms a line around the side of the visitor center, which is also the Bureau of Reclamation's Northern California area office.
We're all walking for salmon.
Okay, that's okay.
Right. Got a salmon?
They start to make their way inside with signs and guitars as props, practicing as they go. They have a lot on their minds. Today's action is part of the Run for Salmon, a 2-week prayer journey to call salmon back to Winnemem Wintu territory above Shasta Dam. The idea of a bigger dam pours salt on wounds that have not healed. So this visitor center protest is about both past and future. It's about attempting to speak truth to power. Once inside, the group fills the small space. The atmosphere quickly turns tense. Michael Preston is the son of Chief Kalyan Sisk.
No Bureau of Reclamation people going to come out?
He approaches a woman seated behind a large desk near the door.
We ask if there's anybody back there that would be willing to come out to speak with us on behalf of the Winnemem Wintu tribe.
He waits quietly. The woman stares ahead with a blank look on her face. She says neither yes or no. She just flat out ignores him, as if he's not there. A few members of the group begin to video what's happening. Meanwhile, the gift shop salesperson, the only other employee around, takes out his phone. He points it at the group with a slight smile on his face, as if he's enjoying the spectacle. A uniformed security guard enters through a side door. He says he wants to make sure everyone is calm.
We're just relaxed.
Are we relaxed? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I can't tell.
Yeah.
All right. I just want to make sure.
The security guard is a local guy. The Winnemem Wintu already know him through personal connections.
You can sing a song to get more relaxed.
What do you want to sing?
Like a flash mob, but without the moves, they break into song.
Respect the people, tell the truth, tell the story of the Winnemem Wintu.
Respect the people, tell the truth.
For more than a decade, the Winnemem Wintu have been trying to convey their ideas for how to return salmon to those historical spawning grounds. But they struggle to be heard. The audience right now consists of the security guard, the front desk woman, the gift shop employee, and the cameras. No one with any influence can hear them. But the singing offers a release of tension, the expression of frustration with a system that has all but erased the Winnemem Wintu.
Tell the story of the Winnemem Wintu. We are the salmon and the salmon are us. Build the swim way so the salmon can run.
When the song ends, Chief Kalyan tries to plead her case again. Addressing the woman at the front desk, she brings up the government's proposal to raise the dam higher, which threatens to flood important sacred sites.
We're just asking for the Bureau of Reclamation staff because, you know, we're the tribe from this river, and building it higher is going to impact us.
The phone rings. The front desk woman, the one who had been ignoring the group, picks up.
Bureau of Reclamation, I mean, we help you.
The crowd is incredulous.
No.
The security guard, who left briefly, returns. He tells the group the visitor center employees are a little freaked out.
The filming without consent is the employees are feeling stressed out by all this.
Public employees, though.
Chief Kalyan Sisk says she just wants to read a letter. She asks if there are any Bureau of Reclamation staff around.
Well, what about the Bureau of Reclamation staff?
Would you like me to accept a letter on their behalf today?
No, we would want to
well,
see an official.
There's nobody here to do that today.
Isn't there anyone you could call, Chief Kalyan asks? It is a little odd. Shasta Dam is a major infrastructure project. Its operations impact farmers and municipalities across the state. The BOR's website shows that the agency's Northern California Area Office and Shasta Dam Visitor Center share an address. But the security guard repeats.
But honestly, there's no administrators here
to recognize that the Winnemem Wintu have been flooded, that this facility right here, it's no wonder they don't know who we are, because there's nothing here that even says anything about Winnemem Wintu being flooded by this dam. Maybe those administrators...
I have my own ideas on that, too. We can discuss this. I've got to go. We have some people. I'll be back in about 5 minutes.
The security guard leaves. One of the men in the group is an Alem Pomo ceremonial singer from Lake County named Gary Thomas. He leans over and whispers to Chief Kaleen.
Well, maybe they think you're all under the lake still.
Maybe they think you're all under the lake still, he says.
That you don't exist anymore.
That you don't exist anymore. The lake he's talking about is Lake Shasta, created by Shasta Dam in the 1940s. It flooded a huge area, 30,000 acres, including Winnemem Wintu villages, sacred sites, and burial grounds.
And all we're asking for is the justice to be recognized and to be dealt with in a humanistic manner. Like we're real people. Like we really have something that belongs to this river and the river belongs to us.
It's now 1 minute before closing. There are no Bureau of Reclamation staff around, but Chief Kaleen decides they will read the letter out loud anyway. Her son Michael faces the front desk.
To whom it may concern, we want the history and present realities of the Winnemem Wintu tribe, from our point of view, to be included in a permanent exhibit in the visitor center on Shasta Dam to accurately represent the suffering we have endured for the state of California's water supply. It is only right that our sacrifice and contribution to California be acknowledged.
The letter also brings up the loss of Chinook salmon.
The installation of Shasta Dam and its operation since 1945 has had devastating effects on the Chinook and other fish, as well as all the wildlife, beavers, bears, mountain lions, etc. There needs to be made public a list of all the species that have been negatively affected by the dam. Such a list should include the reduction of the number of Winnemem Wintu population. E. Chalabeskin. Thank you.
Michael lowers the letter. The front desk employee says nothing. The group begins to file out. She gets up and holds open the door. Once outside, the group forms a loose circle on the grass. Everyone is upset by the treatment we witnessed inside the visitor center. For the Winnemem Wintu, this kind of snubbing is not new. They can tick off a long list of indignities suffered through the years. Still, Chief Kaleen is visibly shaken.
You know, it's good that you got to see this. Because this is not the first time. No. And it's not going to be the last time for us. You can tell by the whole visitor center never mentions any of the Indian people. I mean, these are my people.
Yeah.
This is my mom and dad who lived on this river.
She then turns to her fears about the proposed Shasta Dam and Reservoir Enlargement Project.
We need to know what the plans are. Is there a place where we have input? And so far, it hasn't been that way.
So far, the Bureau of Reclamation has proposed no mitigations, though its own studies say sacred sites will be harmed.
But yet, you know, it's still moving ahead. So I'm glad that you guys all came out and thankful you could sing the songs. It sounded really good.
Yeah.
The acoustics in there was really nice.
As Chief Kaleen speaks, a different security guard approaches the group. She announces the group must leave the premises entirely.
They said that we don't have a permit, and so we have to get off.
They want us out of here now.
They say we don't have a permit.
New security people are here.
Why? We have to have a permit together in the visitor center place?
A group member speaks up, saying they have the right to gather under the 1978 American Indian Religious Freedom Act.
Because the Winnemem-Wintu have a right to pray, and that's what we're doing right now. We're just gathering in prayer.
The security guard says when they went inside, the group became a liability.
So I'm going to ask nicely now for you to leave the premises.
She says if they don't leave, she'll have to call the police.
I have nothing against anything you're doing here.
Flustered, Chief Kellyn speaks to the group.
I don't quite know what to say about this, you know. We're being threatened that they're going to call the police because we want to talk and debrief and pray about this. But, you know, this is not where I thought we would get arrested. On the public facility that sits on my land. The land that they stole. This is all Wintu land, Winnemem land. So I think we'll sing a closing song. And
Chief Kellyn says this song is calling the old-time salmon, the Lindara Nur, back to Bulyum Puyuk, the mountain the rest of the world knows as Mount Shasta.
It's a calling for them. That's where that prayer came from. Calling them home. And so while the treatment hurts my heart, I don't expect anything more from people who have no heart about what this empire stands for. But we're going to continue on. It's like, Beri Yaluk and, you know, Beri Yalumina.
She calls out two words.
Beri Yalumina.
They mean never give up.
Beri Yalumina.
Beri Yalumina.
Beri Yalumina.
Beri Yalumina.
We're never going to give up.
All of this took place on September 25th, 2019. I wanted to revisit what happened that day. I didn't get much from a Bureau of Reclamation spokesperson, so I requested incident reports through the Freedom of Information Act. The reports noted the group lacked a permit. They also indicated that employees were uncomfortable. Security guards called law enforcement, but the group left the premises voluntarily before they arrived.
Who cares about Shasta Dam so much?
Chief Kellyn's son, Michael.
To act like that towards an indigenous group that has any indigenous group around the country, if they're doing something politically, chances are they're probably just in what they're doing, especially if it's in regards to the land. Who's going to try to make money off of it versus who's going to try to protect it?
Having gone with the Winnemem-Wintu to the dam, being a witness to this confrontation with the Bureau of Reclamation, I was really struck by the fact that they say they'll never give up. Here's this small community. They don't have a big PR operation, and yet they're not going to back down from the idea of justice. Lila June, how do you see it?
Well, I don't think their cause is entirely lost. I think they actually do have a chance. I think they might have a greater chance than ever before because the world is finally ready to listen to indigenous peoples. We can no longer deny that our systems, our Western Eurocentric systems, are failing. The political systems, the social system, the ecological systems are unraveling before our eyes. And so we're like, maybe we don't have all the answers. Maybe we should take a look at other worldviews. So I don't think it's completely lost. But here's the thing. Even if it was a lost cause and the Winnemem-Wintu knew they weren't going to win, do you think they would not put up a fight? No, because even if you're going to lose and you know you're going to lose, you have to go down swinging. You have to be able to tell your descendants, I tried. I at least gave it a fighting chance. And through that, showing up for a battle, that no matter what, you're going to be there and you're going to give it your all. That is a victory in and of itself. And so I think that they could sit down on a couch. They could just assimilate into American culture. They've decided that the water is worth fighting for. The salmon are worth fighting for. The whole future of California, frankly, is worth fighting for.
Beri Yalumina.
Beri Yalumina.
Beatty Yalamina.
Beatty Yalamina.
We're never going to give up.
You're listening to Inspired by Interfaith Voices. We just finished part one of A Prayer for Salmon. When we come back, the story continues. Stay with us. Hi, friends. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. I just want to say thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of our community. I don't know if you know this, but we are on the air all the way from Richmond, Virginia to Ketchikan, Alaska, and in so many places in between. We're a national show, and we are a small and mighty team committed to bringing you stories and sounds from around the world that convey not only the diversity and the pluralism of our country, but the beliefs that are shaping our world, our politics, our culture, and the ideas that sustain us and inspire us to think about where we are going. And that brings me to this question. If you value us, if you enjoy listening and appreciate what you're hearing, I want to ask you to take a moment to consider becoming a sustaining member of Interfaith Voices or make a one-time donation at interfaithradio.networkforgood.com. That's interfaithradio.networkforgood.com. Thank you, and let's get back to the show. Welcome back. This is Inspired by Interfaith Voices. I'm Umbreen Khan. We've been listening to part one of A Prayer for Salmon. That's an 11-part documentary podcast series from The Spiritual Edge. Earlier in the program, producer Judy Silber introduces us to Chief Colleen of the Winnemem Wintu people. She, along with other members, gathered in 2019 to peacefully protest and deliver a letter to the officials at the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation's office located at the Visitors Bureau at Shasta Dam, opposing plans to expand. This is a conflict that began nearly 80 years ago when the Shasta Dam was built on sacred lands of the Winnemem Wintu people. It's not just a struggle over ownership, but of understanding what is sacred and what it means to accommodate the religious beliefs of Native people. As we turn to Chapter 2, we dive into that question to understand what the Winnemem Wintu holds sacred, which is where we begin.
A lot of people have a hard time understanding Indigenous sacred sites.
Lila June Johnston is an Indigenous scholar whose research focuses on human ecology and Native worldviews. She writes this about the Winnemem Wintu's sacred sites. Quote, "What one person might dismiss as just another rock might embody and enable an ocean of memories, stories, lessons, and healing for a person whose culture is tied to that land." Unquote.
I think a lot of people have a hard time seeing Winnemem sacred sites as sacred, because they're trying to compare it to a church or a mosque or something of that sort. But I don't think it's actually too hard to understand if we think of different analogies in different cultures. Like, for example, the Ganges River is a huge river in India, very sacred to the people of India. Nothing can designate it as sacred. It's just the very history and its connection to people it makes it sacred. And so why can't these boulders and pools and creeks and forests and mountains be sacred to the Winnemem Wintu? I think sometimes we accidentally deny the humanity of the Winnemem Wintu when we deny that these could ever be sacred sites. We don't see that these are people too. They have profound experiences with certain places, too, that might not be mosques or churches. And this is where they pray. This is how they pray. And so I think we have to really listen to and learn from indigenous peoples who have that mental map and that historical understanding to understand why these are sacred sites.
Chapter 2, A Visit to Sacred Sites.
We travel back to the river all the time, but really, we don't really have a landing place. We don't have a place that we can leave our things. Like, this is home.
Instead, Chief Kalin and other Winnemem-Wintu have to travel for more than an hour, starting from the rural reaches of Redding, California, where a core group of them live. On this mild June day in 2018, they organize food and supplies before taking off. Today's group includes extended family members and friends. It's a small caravan's worth of cars with about 20 people. We'll drive to three sacred sites on a mountain that rises above the McLeod River. These sites exist in a constellation with other sites that could flood if Shasta Dam is built higher. In the Winnemem-Wintu worldview, they're all connected. And so none of them are out of danger. You change one, you change them all. Chief Kalin drives her dark blue Ford Explorer. And as we travel north, her eyes scan the landscape. The snow-capped Trinity Alps rise up in the west. The higher, sharp peaks of the Cascades hover to the north and east. We drive onto a bridge that crosses over the Shasta Reservoir, and she notes that with a higher Shasta Dam, these water levels will go up.
The water will go up past these toilets.
We turn off the highway and wind through a thick conifer forest. Before American settlers began grabbing up land in Northern California, this was all Winnemem-Wintu territory. Now it's managed by the U.S. Forest Service. We pass public campsites. Then we turn onto a bumpy, steep dirt road and climb upwards. Chief Kalin stays attentive. She slows to look at clear-cut patches. She shakes her head at the idea that trees are considered renewable resources. Our first stop of the day is a sacred spring. A small but fierce waterfall pours out of the mountain. Everyone piles out of the cars. People are joking around.
If you were in the other car, I was like, hey, that guy looks like James. And then when he opens the door, like, that is James.
On damp soil, the group gathers in a loose circle.
Everybody got smudged with our root that we use all the time.
This is Helene Sisk. She's Chief Kalin's sister and the Winnemem-Wintu's song leader. Of the two sisters, Helene is the quieter one.
We don't really use the sage and all that stuff everybody else uses. We use a root, and if she sees something about you that needs a little prayer, then she'll come up and give you a prayer.
She explains that to purify their energy, one of the guys smudges. He waves the smoke of a lit root around each person as they stand still with arms outstretched. Then another whispers, to remember the good things, to listen and speak with their heart.
And we wash our face and hands and then put some water on our heart and on top of our head and say a little prayer there, and it helps you out.
So it's like a cleansing?
Mm-hmm, kind of, yeah. Kind of good for you, good for your mind to make you feel better. But just to know that you did that, you know, and you know it's good for you.
We pile back into the cars and continue climbing the rough road until we stop and everyone gets out of the cars again. The men go off into a sacred sugar pine grove to pray. Meanwhile, the women and children stand around. Kalin's son, Nechai, lays out large pine cones neatly in a line.
I found another one.
Some of the women start chatting about how the pine cones fell early this year.
Yeah, a couple of months.
Like, yeah, the world is off track.
The world is wrong. We're not.
World is.
We're on track.
The men come back, we climb back into the cars, and continue the steep climb upwards until we reach the top, a place the Winnemem-Wintu call Universe Rock. It's a remote spot with towering trees, entirely removed from the bustle of modern life. The group pulls out roughed-up metal tables and chairs from the cars. They set out picnic foods and rake pine needles to clear space for a fire on the forest floor. By now, it's late afternoon. The skies are cloudy, and at first, it looks like rain. Michael Preston, the son of Chief Kalin, sits with his back to a tree. He holds an animal skin in his lap. I ask him what he's doing.
I'm just making a fox quiver.
A ceremonial case to hold arrows, made from the skin of a fox he found dead on the side of the road.
It's for the dances. For the war dances.
Michael is in his mid-30s, with clear eyes and dark, thick hair pulled back in a ponytail. He's a deep thinker. He graduated from the University of California, Berkeley, with a degree in society and the environment. But what he values the most is the spiritual side of life. As we talk, he stays focused on the foxskin. He scrapes back and forth with a small knife.
Good place to work on it out here on the sacred sites, actually. Away from everything and just in nature is the best, most clear way, I guess, to make it.
The Winnemem-Wintu have a word to describe the sacred, to describe these sites.
Sawal, but
what does that mean?
Sacred. It's the closest Christian term that we can come up with, I guess. Divine, holy, I know, all those words.
And what is the word again?
Sawal. I mean, language is always going to fail how what's really going on, but that's our attempt, put it in simple terms, I guess. You know, kind of like the Tao and Taoism. Same thing, but it's just trying to explain what the Tao is. I mean, it's a whole book. Same thing for Sawal, I guess.
The American government has never made a lot of room for the indigenous idea of sacred, or Sawal. To explain, I'm going to leave Universe Rock for a bit and introduce you to a really important person in recent Winnemem-Wintu history.
I'm praying for the whole world.
This is Chief Kalin's great-aunt, Florence Jones.
I'm praying for all nationalities, the white, the red, black, the yellow, and the brown. I'm not just praying for what my little people are here today. I'm praying for the world.
When Florence Jones was born, her elders identified her as a powerful healer and groomed her for the role. By the time she died in 2003, at the age of 95, she was respected by Native people all over California and beyond. News of her death even made it onto the obituary page of the New York Times.
The earth, the mother earth, the high winds, the tornadoes, just showing you people that you don't understand. Now I'm here to tell you what the nature is told me to tell you today. Because you don't believe in nature. You lost everything.
She would go into trance and she would talk to spirits and she would tell people what was wrong with them and they'd be crying. And grown men would be crying. I'd be a little kid watching this. And, like, it was always very serious. Like, no talking. Like, no, nothing. Like, and she, the way she did it, like, I can't really explain it. Like, really, it's just very real about it. Something, you feel it. Like, it's, like, there's something going on here. Like, not just something. There's something very big going on here.
Thank you. Florence Jones was a young woman when Shasta Dam went up and displaced her people from their river. But with her knowledge of the old ways, she helped the Winnemem-Wintu hold on to their culture and ceremonies. In her later years, those who knew her well called her Grams.
Grams and then other leaders in the Winnemem were decided to get in the face of the federal government.
Claire Cummings is an attorney who spent decades doing pro bono work for the Winnemem-Wintu, starting when Florence Jones was still alive. She says Native American ceremonies were illegal for much of the country's history. That forced communities such as the Winnemem-Wintu to practice in secret. In 1978, Congress passed the American Indian Religious Freedom Act. It guaranteed tribes access to their sacred sites on public lands. After, Florence Jones applied for a permit to hold ceremony at a place called Decus, on the west side of the McLeod River. Claire Cummings says the application was a gutsy move. It forced government officials to acknowledge that the Winnemem-Wintu were still here, and they had rights.
Saying, I have a right to my ceremony at Decus. And she had the right to continue her ceremonies there.
As a lawyer, Claire Cummings was curious about whether the law could further support Native American religion. Her father had worked at Glacier National Park in Montana.
He was born in 1891, and he worked in Glacier National Park and lived with the Blackfeet. And this is in the early 20th century.
From him, she learned to respect indigenous wisdom.
He said, who were the first people here? Pay attention to what they knew and what they learned. It seemed natural to me to consider the first peoples in any place where I was.
She realized the law prioritizes protection of private property, not indigenous sacred sites.
Our legal system is utilitarian. It doesn't see the value of something that's 10,000 years old and an oral tradition passed down from generation to generation that is kept secret, perhaps, or danced or dreamed or sung. That's just not part of the Western culture way of grasping the world.
In the 1980s, the Winnemem-Wintu owned no land along the McLeod River. Their sacred sites were on private property, national forest, and logging company land. To hold ceremony legally, the Winnemem-Wintu had to either apply for permits or ask permission. Not exactly ideal. But then, out of a mistake, came an opportunity. It all started when loggers cut down ancient trees from a sacred sugar pine grove, the same grove that we visited today. The land is owned by a logging company called Sierra Pacific Industries. Private property owners can mostly do whatever they want on their land. But in this case, Sierra Pacific wanted to do something called a timber harvest. That required a state logging permit.
Well, the problem is that they got the permit and then they didn't respect the restrictions that were placed on that. So they desecrated the sugar pines.
They cut down the trees. Florence Jones was devastated. Sugar pine trees live upwards of 500 years. For all that time, her Winnemem-Wintu ancestors would have gone to these trees to pray, just as she now taught the people around her to do. Not too long after, a group went up the mountain. It included Florence Jones, Sierra Pacific representatives, along with CAL FIRE, a few archaeologists, other timber people from the state, and Claire Cummings, the Winnemem-Wintu attorney.
We went up the mountain and we stopped at the springs and we're sitting there and Grams did her prayers and Grams gave a talk which talked about how injured she and the place was. And she went into trance. She came out of trance and she said, the spirits have said I can forgive you. So she said she forgave them.
Claire Cummings said the people at the meeting, including those from Sierra Pacific, felt really badly.
They cared a lot. They were hamstrung by their jobs and who they work for and their Western viewpoint. So what do you do in a situation where they actually really care, but there doesn't seem to be an obvious answer? Well, in the back of my mind had always been this idea of getting land back for the Winnemem.
She suggested Sierra Pacific sign off on a cultural conservation easement as reparation for the desecrated sugar pine grove. It would permanently protect three sites on the mountain, the Sacred Spring, the Sugar Pine Grove, and Universe Rock. It would allow the Winnemem-Wintu to visit and hold ceremony at these sites whenever they wanted. No logging or development could take place on these grounds, ever, even if Sierra Pacific sold the land.
In some ways, it's a better deal than actually owning the land. In this case, the cultural conservation easement gave them all the rights that they needed, which is ceremonial. You want to be able to just go there when the right time is to do the right dances and songs and pick the herbs or whatever it is you need to do.
It was a big deal. The Sacred Spring, Sugar Pine Grove, and Universe Rock now had permanent protections, and the Winnemem-Wintu had permanent access to the sites. Back at Universe Rock, the sky's clear. Members of the group grab chairs and trudge through overgrown, dry vegetation. It's not clear where we're going until we come to an outcrop of rocks where the mountain drops steeply below. Looking out at the valley, seeing pretty much nothing but trees, it's easy to understand this as a sacred place. In the distance, we see water flowing through the McLeod arm of Shasta Lake. Chief Kalin's son, Netchai, runs to the top of a large boulder.
What do you see?
I see everything. Come up here. It's so cool. You can see everything. Look. Yeah. I can look down because I'm not scared.
Everyone takes a seat on their chairs or on the ground.
What is Kuyum?
They face Chief Kalin, who stands on a large rock, her back to the vast valley below. Beside her is a small chest filled with supplies, such as her pipe, tobacco, and abalone shells. She begins to speak to the group.
Some of you are brand new to here, but this is a sacred place here. And Grams and everybody did a lot of work to protect this from the loggers, protect this from the people who say they own this land now.
When the Winnemem-Wintu want to pray hard on a problem, they say they're going around the world. It's not really the whole world. It's a tour of Winnemem-Wintu sacred sites. These sites are all connected, but each one offers a different energy and power and is occupied by its own spirit beings. Universe Rock is the last stop.
This is where we can unload. If you're carrying a lot of stuff, then you just put it down here. You just let them take care of it. Let them take that. Do away with it. You know, you don't want to carry it around no more. Then you give it to them here.
Done talking, Chief Kalin directs that everyone gets smudged down. Once again, a few guys walk around with the smudging root and also some sacred spring water so everyone can put a little on their hearts and the top of their heads. A few people collect pine needles for tea. Others stare out at the view.
What do I see? You see all the old-time trees out here.
This is Nick Wilson, nephew of Chief Kalin. He's in his late 20s, tall, with sharp features, handsome. It's not always easy being a young Winnemem-Wintu to stay engaged in this way of life and still have a means to survive.
So it's nice seeing those old-time trees, and it's nice not seeing a whole bunch of houses out there. It's real, real peaceful, real beautiful, and it'd be it kind of makes take me back. Like I wish I was back in the old days. You know, like being up here, seeing how it looked.
The trees connect Nick to his ancestors and the culture he's committed to.
This is one of our sacred places. When people have been coming here a long time before me, before Kellen, before, you know, long, old-time place. We're here putting our prayers down, letting the spirits know that we're still here and we're still needing help. Because, I mean, there's a lot of battles going on right now, and this is the closest place we can get to Creator. That's why it's called Universe Rock.
Which brings us back to the battle against a bigger Shasta Dam. Even in this place of refuge where they can relax and let go a bit, the threat to their sacred sites looms large.
If the dam raise happens, I don't know, like, I don't know, just how does it make you feel?
If the dam raise happened, I would be very disgusted and sad and scrambling to my sacred places to see what else can we do.
She'd come back here and to other sacred sites. She'd look to them as you would a friend for wisdom and the strength to keep fighting against the odds. The sun falls below the horizon and everyone takes the short walk back to the fire. They set out the food and sit around in a circle, chatting, gossiping, and poking fun at one another until it's well past dark and it's time to quench the fire, load up the trucks, and leave. Lila June, you published an academic study about the Winnemem-Wintu, where you explored what would be lost to them if the proposed Shasta Dam enlargement project is built. In that study, you talk about how a people can be endemic to a place. That is, that there's only one place in the world where they belong.
Yeah, so a lot of us know about endemic species, right, which are species that are found only in one place in the world, one little valley or one little desert or one little river. So just like the blue-cheeked butterfly fish in the Red Sea, you won't find this beautiful fish anywhere else in the world except the Red Sea. Therefore, if you pollute the Red Sea, if you do something to damage the Red Sea, you could very well lose this species forever because that's the only place they depend on. So similarly, indigenous cultures can be endemic to a place. Their culture can be so wrapped up in one river basin that they become constrained, in a sense, to this specific biome. And so the Winnemem-Wintu are like this. They are intimately connected to this river basin. And what you do to the river basin, you do to the Winnemem-Wintu.
A Prayer for Salmon is a podcast series produced by The Spiritual Edge, which is a project of KALW Public Radio. Support for the series comes from the Templeton Religion Trust, California Humanities, the Calipia Foundation, Save Our Spirits, and The Water Desk, an independent journalism initiative of the University of Colorado, Boulder. Loretta Williams and Jeb Sharp serve as the editors. Tarek Fauda and Chris Aousa are the sound engineers. Links to the podcast can be found in this week's show notes at interfaithradio.org. That's all for this week's show. If you missed any part, you can stream it online at interfaithradio.org. While you're there, you can also learn about us, read the show notes, sign up for our newsletter, and explore the archives. You can find our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or really the podcaster of your choice. Just search Interfaith Voices. And while you're there, help us out. Leave a rating and a review. It helps others find us. A special thanks to MC Yogi for our theme music, additional music by Blue Dot Sessions, and a special thanks to our founder, Maureen Fiedler. This week's episode was produced by Kevin McCarthy. Inspired is a production of Interfaith Voices. We're a nonprofit, and we rely on the generous support of our listeners to bring you this show. I'm your host and executive producer, Umbreen Khan. Remember to stay safe, stay well, and stay connected. I'll see you next week.